to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. And it is Friday, end of the week. Thank goodness it is Friday. A lot of stuff going on here today. Let's just get the financial stuff out of the way right now. The Dow ended down 119 points. It was all over the place today. It was just up and down and up and down. And a lot of people were writing in and saying it looked like the plunge protection team was trying to end the week on an up note because they kept seeing these huge upward spikes that were tied into these put options. And but it didn't stick, and it ended down 119 points. Now, right now the Dow is only 63 points away from falling into the 6,000s. And I had originally prognosticated and oracleized that we would be in the 6,000s by the middle of March. Looks like we might actually get there a little bit early. Meanwhile, the Standard & Poor's has had their worst January and February on record. They've never had losses like this in the entire history of the S&P 500. Right now, Citigroup stock costs less than the fee to use their ATM machine. So go to the ATM machine, you pay a fee, would cost you less to go buy a share of Citigroup stock. So functionally, you know, it's just basically everybody who's invested in Citigroup, they're pretty much wiped out at this point, and that's got to be a very, very depressing situation. Meanwhile, over at JP Morgan Chase, they're now looking at a bunch of lawsuits. It seems that before Bernie Madoff's confession to his pyramid scheme, before the swindler's list became known to the public at large, J.P. Morgan, well, they pulled their own money out of the hedge funds linked to Madoff, suggesting they may have had some inside knowledge of what was about to happen and protected their own money and didn't bother to share with anybody else. So there's some lawsuits that are brewing because of that. Meanwhile, the signs of hard economic times are continuing across the United States and around the world. Confrontations between repossession people and, automobile owners are getting into violence. People are dying trying to prevent their cars from being repossessed. Repo men are being shot. Some are being killed. And my only advice to that is renegotiate the loans, people. A couple of weeks ago, I talked about we don't have to worry about computers taking over the world. They already have done it because all of our nation's financial decisions are made on computer systems, which think solely in terms of the programmed rules and the bottom line and whether it's making money or not, and the human factor is taken out completely. A human banker would say, okay, let's find a way to work with the person who borrowed the money to buy a car so that he doesn't default, we don't lose our money in the long run, and more to the point, it doesn't wind up with violence where agents of the finance company are being shot at or having to shoot the owners of the cars. But that factor is not being included in the calculations because people just look at the computer and the computer says, oh, you will repossess this car today and that car tomorrow and these two cars the day after that. And the repo men who get their money for going out and doing so, they go and grab the car, and it's becoming violent altercations. A big problem from the point of view of the repo people, of course, is that most of these cars have alarms. And some are even wireless alarms, and some have the OnStar thing. And the car owners are being notified of the repossession in progress. And they're coming out thinking maybe it's a theft and the possibility for misunderstanding it, because it's not like the repo guys are wearing uniforms and have badges from the point of view of the owner of the car. It's just a car theft in progress. And as crime continues to escalate in these hard economic times, it is easy for car owners to think it is a regular ordinary car thief and go ahead and haul off with a shotgun and shoot them. I mean, we had the spare tire taken off of our car a couple months back now, so we're always watching out for our car. If I saw somebody around that car, I would assume the worst and I would defend my property. So in other parts of the world, situation is getting very, very ugly. Apparently, it's kind of interesting because you get different expressions of discontent in different parts of the world. In Germany, Apparently, the thing right now is that people suffering from the economic downturn are taking out their anger and frustration on the very expensive German cars. They're just torching them anonymously. You know, lost your job, go torch a BMW. And apparently, this is a real surging phenomenon where... you know, these cars are being attacked as symbols of the upper class. Right now, I think because of the economic downturn, ostentatious displays of wealth are definitely going out of fashion. You know, leave that Rolex at home. Wear a Casio. Casios are more fun anyway. And, you know, keep a low profile because otherwise you're going to be a target. You know, Greece, they're using Molotov cocktails. Paris, they just knock things over. Budapest, they're tossing eggs at politicians. And in Germany, they're torching the very expensive cars. Here in the United States, we're starting to see the homes of politicians and CEOs being vandalized by people who are just frustrated at watching the country's economy driven off a cliff and seeing the American people looted to basically give money to the ultra-rich who got us into this mess. And the frustration is building and building and building. And it's we're heading to a breaking point. There's absolutely no question in my mind. There will be an initiating incident, like the shooting of the 15-year-old boy in Greece, and riots will erupt everywhere, and they'll try and say, oh, it's because of this incident, and they don't want to talk about the fact that we, the American people, and indeed the people of the world, we have been pushed to the brink of global revolution because of this small, tiny percentage of the population who has acquired to themselves most of the wealth and thinks that makes them gods, and that they are now immortal. Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette had pretty much the same attitude. For that matter, so did Ceausescu, and so did Charles I, now that I think about it. So did Mussolini. Anyway, so this is our Friday show. We'd like you to join us on the air. The phone number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Donovan is back in the control room, twiddling the dials, keeping us on track, and answering the phone calls. So pick up that phone, punch those buttons, call on in, let me know what's on your mind. Meanwhile, I want to talk now about Barack Obama. I got to tell you, every day goes by, I have a new reason to be completely disappointed and disgusted in this guy. I mean, I got up today and I turn on the TV and there he is making another speech. We're out there and we're going to deal with the problems and we're going to swiftly go and boldly do this and be bold swiftness and swift boldness as we boldly swift on to, or swift, bold, whatever. And he goes on and on and on and on. He's still campaigning. He's still selling the Obama brand to the American people. He's got the job, and now we need him to do it. And so far, he isn't. He's just up there every day talking about his latest plan to solve the problem, and every day it's a new plan. They're putting out all these trial balloons to find anything that's going to find traction. None of them are. And all he's doing is conveying the impression that they really don't have an answer for any of this, because it keeps changing and changing and changing and changing. Now, the only thing he said good today is he has tightened up the deadline to get our kids home from Iraq. He says, he's talking now about having our troops home by the end of August 2010. Now, there's a loophole in this because he's going to be leaving what are called enablers in Iraq. In other words, we're pulling our troops out, but we're leaving troops in. This is the doublespeak that we can expect for the next 4 to 8 years from the Obama White House. We're pulling our troops home, but we're having to leave some troops in. And given how many times they've changed the deadline for pulling our kids out of Iraq, I'm not ready to assume that this one is correct. I've had enough of the speechifying. I want to see something actually get done. And so far, all the man is doing is talking while he loots the American people and hands it to the cronies. But the most disgusting thing that Barack Obama has done, I will tell you about when we come back from this break. 800-259-9231. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha. We've got callers waiting on the line. We've got email coming in from the listeners. I'm going to do the email first. Then I want to talk about, finish up the thought about Barack Obama before we take the calls. From the email, Germans consider their cars as an extension of their own bodies. I lived in Munich for 3 years. Man, do not touch bumpers when parking. This is true. I worked in and lived in Munich back in the middle of the 1980s. For a company called Steiner Film. I was actually an American representative of a company that Steiner was doing business with, but I got to go to Europe and hang out there, and it was really quite wonderful. And it's absolutely true. Germans who've got the nice cars, it's like you go down and you see somebody who's got a muscle car here in the United States. It's part of their identity. It's their persona. You know, if like something happens to that car, they don't even know who they are anymore. And it really is very much like that. And the Germans are very, very proud of how things look. Very clean cities. They do not tolerate litter and the kind of slop and deterioration we're starting to see here in the United States. Okay, I want to get back to this Barack Obama thing, because I got to tell you, this is one of those stories. I have to just watch my language, because if I was ever going to say anything that was going to get the license at this radio station yanked, this is the kind of story that tempts me to use those really bad words. Now, the United Nations is planning this conference called the Durban Review Conference. It's called Durban 2. And the first one, Durban 1, was rather infamous for coming out and saying that Israel is a racist apartheid state and their behavior toward the Palestinians is basically that of an occupying power. Now, that is not going to come to as a shock to anybody who actually is watching what's going on. Well, apparently an early draft of the Durban 2 document has leaked out and again reiterates that Israel is a racist apartheid state and an occupying power. And again, this is absolutely true. They've got the color-coded license plates, places where only Jews can go and everybody else cannot. It is, absolutely. I mean, even the South Africans are saying Israel is even worse with apartheid than South Africa was. And believe me, the South Africans, they're experts. They know what they're talking about when it comes to apartheid. So Israel, over the last week, has been going around and lobbying various world leaders. Oh, don't go to that conference. It's just a bunch of anti-Semites, and they're going to use it to say bad things about Israel. I'm sorry, it's not bad things about Israel if it's true. Well, anyway, earlier today, the Obama administration announced they will boycott the Durban 2 conference because of its anti-Semitism. Now, if there is anybody out there in the reach of my voice who had any doubt at all that Israel is in control of the United States government, this should settle the matter once and for all. It is not anti-Semitism to call Israel a racist state if, in fact, Israel is a racist state. And this constant use of anti-Semitism to defend Israel's actions and to obstruct criticism of them makes about as much sense as saying that you're not allowed to criticize Hitler and Nazi Germany because you're just being anti-Aryan. And how dare you say bad things about the Der Fuhrer? You're just guilty of anti-Aryanism. And you should not say those things. Even doesn't matter how much Hitler and the Nazis deserve being criticized, you're just being anti-Aryan. That's what's going on here. Israel is, in fact, doing all the things people are talking about. And Israel is screaming it's anti-Semitism. As if normal, moral human beings would have no objection with dropping burning white phosphorus on school kids in Gaza if it was somebody other than Israel doing it. Like if the Poles came down, okay, or the French came down and napalmed those school kids, nobody would pay any mind at all. Because the real issue is that people just hate Israel, and that's the only reason they're complaining. It is utter nonsense. We know it's nonsense. You know it's nonsense. For the Obama administration, which, by the way, look through the staffing that they've got in there, and you will find one ethnic group heavily overrepresented over all others. A lot of dual nationals in the White House executive staff right now. For the Obama administration to cave in on a United Nations conference on racism, because the pressure from Israel, I think, has sent exactly the wrong message to the rest of the world, that in point of fact, the United States doesn't stand for the rule of law or morality anymore. The United States is the slave, and I use that word deliberately, Barack, of the powers that be in Israel. Because that is the only possible explanation for the United States, which fought so hard against racism in our own country, in our own history, to absolutely rubber stamp what Israel is doing in Palestine. Somehow, somewhere, our government is totally under the control of a foreign power. I remember when I was a kid, you know, we were always being warned about communist subversion. Well, I guess it wasn't the communists we should have been watching out for. Because right now, I mean, if you want to know everything that's going wrong in our country, it's not our country anymore. We are the victims of subversion from an outside government. They are in control of our country. And there's no way to vote them out. We thought that's what we were getting with this new election. Change we could believe in. There's no change. We're in exactly the same situation we were under Bush. The nation is broke. Its economy is collapsing, and we're poised to go make war on Israel's enemies endlessly until the end of time. And I am so angry about this. And if you're not angry, there is something wrong with you. We're going to go to the phones real quick. We've got Trey in Texas. I understand you want to talk about the budget.
Mike, I love the show, and thanks for taking my call.
Okay, well, what's on your mind?
Well, I want to talk about Obama's budget a little bit, and I think they introduced it in the House on Tuesday, and it was passed yesterday, so, you know, it's another deal where they just rammed it right through, like, the stimulus package, and we're now finding out all the rotten stuff that's in there.
And, yeah, it's just more of the giveaways and pork, and we're going to be talking about some, you know, just real wastes of money. It's like it's a big party. It's the fall of Rome is what's going on. They're grabbing the money, and they're going to have a wild party with it until the party stops.
Yeah, and one of the worst things I think that's in there is almost $300 million in funding for the animal identification system, which is basically microchipping livestock.
Well, I understand that, and you know, part of the justification for that is they're trying to keep an eye, on the mad cow disease, and they've already discovered that they ran into some tracking problems. So, you know, I understand the justification for it. I'm not sure that much money is justified right now versus some other situations we need to be looking at. But again, this is basically pork barrel. Barack Obama is basically paying back all of his supporters and backers for his run for the White House by looting the public treasury and handing out the goodies to everybody who helped him into office. And it is so blatant and so obvious, you know, and I'm waiting for the American people to start getting as angry as we're seeing happening in Europe and Iceland and the rest. Trey, thanks a lot. We got to stop here. The music says it's time for a commercial break. So we're going to stop here. When we come back, we're going to go with Clarence in Oklahoma on the phone and get back to more of your listener letters and stuff. I got to calm down. I am so angry at this Durbin 2 thing. I gotta take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Present views. Feed us with him.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And before we go to Clarence in Oklahoma, I want to respond to a comment that was brought up in the chat window at whatreallyhappened.com. Basically, a reminder that Barack Obama, during his first press conference as president, responded to a very direct question by Helen Thomas regarding what nations in the Middle East actually have nuclear weapons by being pointedly evasive and just going on and on about we're not going to allow a nuclear arms race in the region, blah, 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 blah. And it reminded that the reason Barack Obama did this is because it is against United States law for the U.S. government to be sending foreign aid or military aid to any nation that is involved in nuclear materials, nuclear research, and nuclear weapons development that is not a signer of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which Israel is not. And so even though we see reactors all over the place in Israel, and we've got photos of the weapons lab from Mordecai Vanunu, and we have statements made by Israel's own leaders implying that they have a nuclear capability, the U.S. government cannot officially acknowledge that Israel has nuclear weapons, or we have to stop sending the money. And the fact that Barack Obama pointedly evaded Helen Thomas' question is another indication that, yes, he is totally under the control of a foreign government. You know, forget Manchurian candidate. This is the Tel Aviv candidate. And we're there, and it is real. And he keeps proving it over and over and over again. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Clarence in Oklahoma. Aloha, Clarence. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind today?
Well, some people tell me I don't have much of a mind to have something on, but you just hit. I had so much to say. You just keep going and going while I'm listening, and then all of a sudden I'm starting. I have a thing to say, and then all of a sudden, you know, I have to think about it.
Write it down. Write it down.
Let me go from your last comment, and I'll try to backtrack if I can.
Okay.
That's absolutely true. I saw that. And, the mainstream media, or the lamestream media, never said anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't make a big deal about that. Mm-hmm. Helen Thomas is a jewel. She has interviewed every president since Franklin D. Roosevelt.
She's going to be banished to the back row after this one.
She'll
be right back there.
She's done that. She's been there before. She doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
But that was because Israel is not a signatory to the inspection treaties of the and they know they've got 200 to 400 nuclear weapons warheads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Mordecai and Vanunu let the cat out of the bag.
Yes.
And I saw that news conference, and I thought that is just that it tells you volumes right there.
It really did. Basically, it tells us that Barack Obama knows that the U.S. sending of money to Israel is a violation of U.S. laws, but he's going to go on
and
doing
international
it.
Treaties, probably.
And the international treaties. Yes, it's a violation of treaty, and in sending this message, because the rest of the international community, they know what's going on. They know what treaties are applicable here, and they see what's going on with the U.S. basically, now we're boycotting the United Nations Conference on Racism because Israel doesn't want to be called racist, even though they are. And it's absurd. I mean, the image of the United States is being dragged in the mud, publicly, by the President of the United States and his administration. And it's like he doesn't even seem to care. He doesn't care what it looks like.
I don't know. We've got such a criminal government. It's never going to be. There'll have to be a very big change somewhere in this government.
I think it's coming. I don't see any way to avoid it at this point.
It's got to be, because if they don't, look at our situation economically, locally, look at our situation internationally.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the world hates the United States, and I don't care. Yeah, they may have a temporary glow about Barack, but when they find out that he's doing the same thing that the previous administrations did, because he's controlled by other entities than the American people, they will understand.
Oh, no, well, the glow has already come off. The honeymoon is definitely over. We're seeing all these articles in the foreign press where they're basically saying he's He's saying the exact same things about Iran that Bush was saying.
Exactly.
And he's ignoring the intelligence agencies. Our own intelligence agencies are saying Iran is not building nuclear weapons. The IAEA says Iran is not building nuclear weapons. Obama is ignoring our own intelligence agencies in order to support Israel's position, while Israel is trying to lobby to get the head of the IAEA kicked out because he keeps coming out and saying Iran is building a power station and that is all they're doing. And so Israel is trying to bludgeon our country into a war on Israel's enemies. And folks, the reason we've got to oppose this by any and all means, war with Iran will mean war with Russia. And that is a war we will probably lose because we don't have the industrial capacity that we had that allowed us to win World War I and World War II. We've let that all go. We don't have factories sitting ready to be converted over to make war materiel. We'd have to start building those factories from scratch. That takes years to do.
You know something, Mike?
Yeah.
We can't even put boots on our troop shoes because they're built. They are made overseas, literally.
Yes, that's right.
And I'll take you two more quick comments, and that's what I was originally backtracking to. And gosh,
okay.
Just a great exposition there. The guy that got shot, repoing the car.
Yes.
I live in front of a repo lot.
Mm-hmm.
In my little town here. And I'll tell you where I am. I don't care anymore. I'm not hiding. I'm in Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm sure the government has enough on me. I don't care. And whenever the time comes, and I've worked for the bastards for 30 years. But they have extended their little fence.
Yes.
About halfway. They owned the entire lot. Now I have a vacant field in front of me, but they've extended the fence halfway up that field because they don't have enough places to put the repoed cars.
Oh, yeah.
That they're getting.
Yep.
And that tells you right there. I've been to the malls. And the mall nearest me looks like a ghost town.
We've got the same thing here, and we've got like a one-third vacancy rate around here, and stores are closing left and right. And there's no sign that it's slowing, that the deterioration is slowing. It's just heading for this horrendous crash where everything's going to lock up.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, it is very, very scary. I said the really scary thing is, you know, I think the Obama administration is convinced that if they can start a war, it's going to make all the other problems seem less important. But it isn't, because he's dealing with an American public that is far better educated into the subtleties of politics and government than we had back in the 1930s or back at the turn of the previous century. Your last point, because we're almost out of time here.
Go ahead. I'll say that for another time. You go ahead.
All right. All right, thanks an awful lot. Yeah, we do have one more caller waiting online, but I don't want to bring him on here and just have to shut him up in 30 seconds. So, John, just hang on there. No, not John. We're waiting for James. Sorry. Too many J's here. James in Ohio, stay on the line through this next break. And meanwhile, we're talking about, you know, all the pork barrel that is going out in the new budget. And again, it's not money that is going to revive our industrial base. It's money that is going for favored pet projects of political supporters. And it just feels like they're not even going to try and bring back manufacturing because they know they can't. They can't do it in time to really alter the ultimate fate of the country. We're going to stop here, have a couple of commercials. We'll be back with James in Ohio after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. while the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We've got James in Ohio on the line right now. Aloha, James. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hello, Michael. Are you calmed down now?
Yes, a little bit.
Well, it's too bad. I wanted to get you fired up again.
Well, you probably will. Go ahead.
How is that Obama crow tasting?
Well, I got to tell you, it tastes pretty bad, but, you know, I'm going to keep on chewing on it because the man has just, ultimate disappointment. And I'm not ready to admit that McCain would have been any better. I think the message here very, very clearly is it doesn't matter who we vote for because Israel is in control of our government, and they just proved it today.
Oh, my God, it's being proved in front of my eyes every day. I talk to my friends that were very fired up about all this torture and all this other illegal activities, and now that Obama's in, they want to go back to bed. They don't see anything wrong. Everything's beautiful. You know, they're worried about the bankers, but they're not worried about anything else in foreign policy and 18,000 more troops to Afghanistan and bombing sovereign nations and Pakistan. And
you know, I've got a theory here. I think the real Barack Obama has gone on an extended vacation in the Bahamas, and that's actually George Bush inside a Barack Obama suit.
Because, flash like that.
Yeah, it's just absolutely, you know, there's no difference between the two.
Obushma.
Absolutely, yeah, Obushma. We're going to start calling him that.
Yeah.
Or Obey Me or any of the other names here. But, yeah, it's, you know, there is no change whatsoever. We are headed in the same self-destructive direction. You know, if anything, Barack Obama has, like, you know, kicked off the brakes, so we're heading there faster.
I almost admire the pro-Zionist propaganda has worked so well. It really is. It's impressive.
Yeah, well...
I mean, everywhere I go, you can't even question it. Anybody, maybe like 1 in 20 people, you can say, hey, do you think what they're doing might be wrong?
Well, you know, this is real Dark Ages mentality that we're seeing coming out of Israel, because their attitude is it doesn't matter what they really do. They can do whatever they want, because in the end they can bludgeon everybody into saying, oh, yes, your feces are not odoriferous. And, you know, and this is real Dark Ages thinking. The idea that might makes right, that it doesn't matter what truth and reality really is, as long as you have the means to club the masses into believing as they are told to believe. We're seeing that, you know, with, you know, this Bishop Williamson. He apologized for upsetting people. He didn't recant his remarks. And Israel's saying that's not enough. We will not accept his apology until he agrees to believe as we tell him to believe.
I know.
I mean, you know, this is right out of the unholy crusades, where you go into other people's countries and say, oh, you can't believe in that God over there. You've got to believe in this God over here, or I will slit your throat.
Well, when did this all begin? At the end of World War II? I mean, how long has this been growing in the United States?
Well, I think it's been sort of ebbing and waning for the last couple of thousand years. And I have to be very honest, the more I see what's going on here in the United States, I'm seeing more and more parallels with what was going on in Germany just prior to the rise of Hitler.
Yeah.
Where there was this, you know, this clique of self-supremacist people that was simply trying to reorganize the society for their own personal benefit, and it built up a lot of resentment and a lot of hostility, and, you know, that created that fertile ground for a backlash that Hitler used to such great advantage.
Isn't there similarities in Russia, too, with...
Oh, yeah, with the whole oligarch situation and the rise of communism. Yeah, it really is. We're seeing the same patterns repeat over and over and over again.
So how did they throw them out in Russia?
I think they let most of them move to Israel more recently. Older times, you know, there were all these expulsions. I mean, I've been building a list of all the persecutions and expulsions of the Jewish people throughout history, and it's hundreds of times this sort of thing has happened. And you look through at all of the various circumstances, and there's only one common factor in all of those, and that is the way the Jewish people see themselves as separate and apart and superior to everybody else around them, and how they treat the rest of the community around them. It just inevitably creates this hostility, and they'll push it way too far trigger a backlash, and then they run around tearing their hair out and saying, oh, why me, Lord?
I've been battling with a Zionist blogger, and I keep asking her, where is the line between pride and supremacy? Will you please define it for me? And she just said, well, it's where everybody else is.
Yeah. It's what's okay for us is not okay for you. I mean, we see that double standard all the time.
Yeah.
But with this thing about Durban 2 today, I mean,
that's horrible.
Israel has just shown to the world that, you know, we, the American people, are not in charge of our country anymore. It's just like Ariel Sharon said, we, the Jewish people, control America, and the Americans know it. But they sure proved it today.
Oh my God. Oh, and I just wanted to add one more thing too. You just put up the blog about the tea parties. I'm really enjoying that. I'm so glad to see it. And
yes.
Thank you to WAIS Radio.
Well, thank you very much for giving them that shout out. And, the Tea Party is kind of a special symbolic thing for us Americans. One of my ancestors came home with salty tea in his boots one night 200-some-odd years ago. I was going to go throw some tea bags into Pearl Harbor down here, but I wound up giving the box to a homeless guy I saw on the way. So I'm sorry I fell short on that particular thing. But, but at some point, the symbolic gestures are going to be seen as not effective. I mean, they've been ineffective. We've had millions of people marching against these wars, and yet the wars still happen. So we've got taxation without representation, and at some point, the symbolic gestures are going to give way to non-symbolic gestures. We're starting to see it with the vandalization of homes of various politicians and CEOs. It's going to get ugly. And the U.S. government is already preparing for it. And we, the American people, have got to be planning and preparing how we're going to circumvent that. And because otherwise, you know, if we let them say when and where the confrontation is going to take place, we will lose automatically. And people who are really seriously thinking about opposing what the government is trying to do to this country, you got to start thinking very seriously on a tactical level. Two books I would recommend, Sun Tzu's The Art of War and The Book of Five Rings by Miyamoto Musashi. Two very excellent books for discussing these kinds of events, and they're available online for free. Anything else, James? Okay, I guess we lost James. And, all right, turning back to the news then, one of the other stories that came up here, I'm going to finish on this one because I wanted to kind of get past this. I'm calling it the Big Bang Race. We all know the Large Hadron Collider being built in Europe. Its goal is to create a particle called the Higgs boson, which is thought to account for a lot of the so-called missing mass in the universe. See, the mathematics that they have for the so-called Big Bang and the expansion of the universe, the math doesn't work out on several different fronts. And rather than go back and say maybe the basic theory is flawed because it's got such religious support, the churches all love the idea there was a Big Bang. God sneezed and the universe came into being here. So rather than go back and question that original theory, because the numbers don't work out, they're starting to invent things to fill in. The so-called dark matter, invisible stuff we can't see, but it conveniently makes the equations that we've got work. And if you think about it very carefully, this is like epicycles. When the church was championing the earth at the center of the universe theology and torturing anybody who didn't agree with it, the mathematics couldn't work out to explain the planet's path across the sky. So they invented something called epicycles in order to make the mathematics line up with what they were actually seeing. There aren't really any epicycles. It was just a device so that the observed reality could be made to conform with the religiously desired outcome. So, having covered that, we're back to this Large Hadron Collider. They've had a lot of problems with this machine. They're now talking about fall before they're going to be able to crank it up. Meanwhile, okay, we're having the Fermilab, the Tevatron, here in the United States, is cranking up to try and create the Higgs boson themselves, even though the Tevatron was not originally designed to work at those energies. So they're getting a bunch of money from the stimulus bill to go out and try and beat the Large Hadron Collider to the Higgs boson. Now, understand me, I love science. I think science is cool. If I had the money, I'd have a lab in my garage just tinkering with magnets and stuff, because I love that kind of stuff. But that's not what the stimulus package money is supposed to be for. Going out and hoisting the flag and proving that we're better than CERN and the Large Hadron Collider. Because particle physics, yes, it's interesting to understand the fundamental nature of the universe, But it's not, except for weapons applications and the PET scanner, we're not going to get products and industries out of this that are going to bring back the jobs to the United States. And the stimulus package was supposed to be about bringing back manufacturing jobs so that ordinary Americans can pay their mortgage and pay their credit cards and pay their bills and get the economy going again. And why they're not doing that, I don't know. That's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Central Time for our Saturday 2-hour What Really Happened extravaganza. So until then, stay safe, be well, drive carefully, hug your loved ones, and aloha, America.